Notion Entertainment. Notion Entertainment. Dot com.
Tune in to NotionEntertainment.com today to enjoy the finest music produced by Romito. Join now radio's best hosts, Ed and Zachary Dacquery, in the aftermath. Please dance your ass off to DJ Ben's Bumpin' Mixtapes. As always, thank you and God bless Free Enterprise. www.notionentertainment.com.
Everything's changing, dirty down.
All right, Zachary Dacquery. Have you seen that new Ordinary Man video that Ozzy released with featuring Elton John?
Yeah, actually, I just watched it a little earlier today.
Yeah, he's kind of sitting back in the theater, looking at all his moments throughout rock and roll history and the things that he's done and the madness that he's created. And it kind of made me think, like, I don't think Ozzy will die an ordinary man. I think he really will be remembered in rock and roll history. And not only that, he has created this whole, you know, I don't want to say genre of people, but people that put up the metal horns and, you know, really love their heavy rock and roll style. And I think in some ways, like, when we worship our rock and roll music, I kind of, you know, give a toast to Ozzy, because he was kind of that foundation to the rock and roll music back in the late 60s and early 70s with the Black Sabbath. The stuff he was talking about back then was pretty revolutionary, and Ozzy won't die an ordinary man. And I just want him to know that, and he's kind of a prophet in some ways. Would you say the same? Could you see Ozzy as kind of a prophet type figure?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, I think him dying an ordinary man is completely out of the question at this point. Like, he is absolutely a certified cornerstone in the history of rock and roll. If you look at his credentials, I mean, he's, what, Black Sabbath started, what, 69? That's when they started. Like, they almost single, like, every single metal band in existence today owe their existence to Black Sabbath. I mean,
yeah, that's how I feel. We do owe it to Ozzy that when we hear those guitars and that sound, like, Black Sabbath just had such a solid sound, especially on vinyl, that it's just like exploding through the speakers. And Ozzy is, you know, some say he's the Antichrist, but I kind of fall on the other side where it's, I think Ozzy is somebody to look up to. And, you know, he may have went overboard with some of the drugs that he's taken and kind of being a drunk lunatic, but his message that he's always conveyed to people of expressing from the inside out, and you know, Ozzy screaming, giving it his all the time, full throttle, we owe it to him. And he won't die an ordinary man. And I think when people look back on rock and roll history, they might see Ozzy as this bright, shining star, you know, in the future, looking back on all the different people. I mean, do we really want to put Mick Jagger on this pedestal of this prophet, you know, or Roger Waters, or, you know, Jimmy Page, you know, these people coming out of London back in the early 70s, and they all have this legendary status for rock and roll. You know, John Lennon. Is John Lennon more of a Jesus type figure for people to write in history? Or is it, could it be more of this darker figure that does whatever the hell he wants, like Ozzy Osbourne? What do you see? John Lennon versus Ozzy for the looking back into history. Who is the Jesus of the future? I mean, back 20, 30 years ago, when people looked at populations, they would say, you know, for some reason, I don't agree with this, but they'd say, you know, 45% one type of religion like Christianity and 55% Muslim in the global population. But nowadays, it's like people follow all different forms of beliefs. You know, Ozzy might have more likes on his fan page on Instagram than the Catholic Church right now. In 2,000 years, when they look back on, you know, when the electric guitar and everything was invented, and these peace movements like John Lennon did, or these dark movements of Ozzy just like bringing fire onto the stage and masses of people just
worshiping his, like, just his vibes, man. Who do you see when people in the future, say we migrate to Mars, 2,000 years in the future, they look back on Earth and they're on Mars and they say, you know, back in 1972, this rock and roll thing was just exploding in this area of the world called Britain. And these 12 people that came out of this rock and roll movement really changed the world at that time. But who of those 12 people in rock and roll history back in the early 70s is the Jesus, the head top honcho man, you know, out of, say, the 12 apostles and the one Jesus? Is Ozzy Jesus, or is it John Lennon, or is it Jimmy Page, or is it, you know, Mick Jagger, or what do you say, Zachary Dagger?
Well, first off, I want to go back to something you said earlier about Ozzy going a little bit overboard with, like, the drugs and stuff. Now, you can't say that. That's what makes Ozzy Ozzy. You want a crazy, drugged out Ozzy. You know, yeah. You don't want the, I mean,
he's not scared of death.
You know, like the Osbourne's Ozzy is fine. I mean, that's fine, but that's not what you want. You want the crazy, coked out Ozzy biting heads off of bats and doves. That's what, when you think of Ozzy Osbourne, that's what you want. I mean, you don't want America's burnout dad.
That's why you put the horns in the sky.
But now back to your point about Ozzy versus John Lennon. Well, I think that, if you're going to say who would be the Jesus figure, you would have to say Ozzy, because I think John Lennon would be more in line with being more of an emulation of Jesus, pushing, like, Jesus-type messages of love and peace, understanding your common man. Mm-hmm. And that's what made Jesus revolutionary from those days, and why those values took over our society, our civilization. Yeah. To become that figure that Jesus was, you have to take the entirety of that. That's an entire reshaping of civilization.
Yeah.
And so if we're look at what our civilization is, as if even just nominally paying lip service to peace, love, and understanding, then John Lennon really couldn't be a revolutionary prophet.
It's already happened. Jesus already did it. Ozzy really kind of tore apart the fabric of society. You know, even like and that's why he was such a revolutionary for our time. You know, Jesus already did what John Lennon did. Jesus brought peace on earth. Ozzy did something completely different for society, and that's what makes him a prophet. You know, you can't have a second coming of Jesus. You have to have something completely new. And that's why Ozzy, you know, should in that case be the prophet of the rock and roll legend from England at that time instead of John Lennon.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're going to posit a 2,000 year scenario where metal has taken over the world, then mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you have to look at Ozzy as that, person.
I feel like that's where we're going. Like, all people from all backgrounds love the music, and, you know, maybe love it so much that they get a tattoo of their favorite band or something on their bodies, and people express themselves in so many ways in metal that nowadays, with all the different cultures, I feel like that movement is a very accepting movement for people from all backgrounds to be viewed in their own unique way.
I like it. I think so. I'd agree with that. So if we've decided that Ozzy could possibly be the Jesus Christ of 2,000 years from now, we have to kind of look and, you know, who are... If we think that history is going to be like a cyclical repetition of symbology, I mean, who are the characters that are going to be the satellite figures around Ozzy in the future. Like, would Ronnie James Dio, the guy that took over for him in Black Sabbath, is he Judas? Or is he more of a Paul?
Hmm. You know, Ozzy left Black Sabbath, I feel like, on his own in a lot of ways. And Dio, you know, saved the music behind the band, like, to be able to continue on. So I don't think there was too many hard feelings, as many hard feelings as maybe there was with, you know, Judas and Jesus. I think Ozzy, you know, wanted to take his message more to this, like, arena stage and really get more theatrical with what he was doing, because Ozzy's always known that he's not that ordinary man. And now he's kind of on his, you know, deathbed. And I don't think Ozzy has ever had the moment that, like, he's been crucified yet. Like, when he left Black Sabbath, that wasn't the end of Ozzy. Like, Ozzy's end's coming now. And, like, I think us as people that love metal, rock and roll, need to start preparing this message to give to Ozzy that, you know, you're not going to die an ordinary man, because we're going to continue to love what you've done for us, Ozzy. And he needs to know that, because he's always known he's a legend, and he's brought that to the stage. Ozzy wants, and Ozzy deserves, his fans to worship him like the prophet that he is. I think the best way for rock and roll to continue is to always remember what Ozzy created with Black Sabbath, and that sound that those producers were able to make on the stereo system. Because, like, just nowadays, stuff just sounds like garbage from, like, that Ableton Live and fucking just, like, Cubase fucking...
In analog, you mean, like, the sound of analog recordings versus digital?
Yeah, in Black Sabbath, just, like, their sound was so explosive that, like, I think if Black Sabbath, like, plugged in nowadays with, like recording system, like, it just couldn't handle those tube amps and stuff that they were using. And Ozzy, like, banging that tambourine and, like, fucking just, like, flipping out on stage, man. That sound that they, that explosive sound that they had, that sparked this idea of throwing your hands in the air and, like, putting the horns up and worshiping, like, fucking rock and roll. Ozzy, like, is just the man that kind of just, like, really... I mean, Tony Iommi is right there with him, like, with how he played that guitar, but, you know, he might be a disciple.
That's because the front man gets all the praise. Is that what you're, getting at? Like, the singer, Mick Jagger, gets all the praise, but...
You know, Ozzy, those guys came from nothing.
Like, Robert Plant probably gets more praise than Jimmy Page or John Bonham.
Yeah, I don't know. Jimmy Page gets a lot of credit. And, like, so that's where I'm going, is, like, Jimmy Page is this, like, rich kid getting paid to go to this private music teacher to play the blues, and he meets these guys for the Yardbirds and Eric Clapton, the Pretty Boy, and it's like Ozzy is fucking, like, hanging cows at the slaughterhouse, fucking gutting pigs, and, like, he's out there, he wasn't a good thief, but he was out there, he was convicted of armed burglary. You know, when you look at Jesus, like, Jesus was a poor carpenter. He wasn't this rich, pretty boy like Jimmy Page. You know, Tony Iommi got his fingers cut off in, like, the steel mill and, like, played guitar without fucking fingers. But we still don't put Tony Iommi on the cross, because it's Ozzy, what Ozzy went on to do after Black Sabbath and making that darkness into this, like, cult, like, you know, Kiss was a huge band, the Kiss Army, but Ozzy is one man. You know, there was no Kiss reality TV show. There was Oz. Ozzy would be fucking president. Like, there was Trump. If Ozzy could have been president, he would have been president instead of Trump. You know? That's where America was going at that time. Like, they wanted to take whatever reality TV show person from that decade that's lived up to be this, like, Ozzy should have been the American president, but he couldn't because he was born somewhere else. America wanted Trump because they wanted that reality TV show host from that era to rule our country. And, like, Ozzy is just something else, man. He's over America. He's, like, he's this worldwide just heavy metal fucking figure.
You know, Gene Simmons, actually, he did have a reality show. That's neither here nor there. But yeah, I think to go back to what would the crucifixion of Ozzy be? You know, and I hate to say it because I was a fan of that, of the show The Osbournes back in the day. You know, I'll be candid. You know, Ozzy Osbourne was like one of my first really favorite musicians, like musical acts, like back when I was starting like really get into music, maybe when I was like 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm. That No More Tears bass line is just
it kills. It's great. But I would say that reality show kind of did, that was kind of the death of Ozzy Osbourne in the symbolic order. Insofar as, like, you know, he, like, literally scared people, like, really bad, like, back in his heyday. Like, let's say in the 80s, people literally thought he was the Prince of Darkness. Like, thought that he was, like, the sign of decline and fall of Western civilization, like, the Antichrist, the Satanist, and all that. And I think that if we're going to look at that as being like kind of the symbology and like the what makes metal, like that kind of darkness, that dark undertone, I think that him just being kind of a doddering old formerly drugged out dad is kind of like the end of that mythology for him. I mean, it's still there, but you're always going to question like, it's better, you have to think about Neil Young, and it's better to burn out than fade away.
Yeah.
But also Rust never sleeps. So, hey, you know, what are you going to do about that?
Yeah. Ozzy deserves to fade away. I hope he lives for 20 more years. I mean, you know, maybe with all this technology really booming with medical stuff, we can keep Ozzy alive for the next millennia or something.
Hey, Keith Richards is still kicking.
Yeah.
There's always Keith Richards.
I would consider Keith Richards a disciple of rock and roll history. You know, him and Ozzy are pretty far apart, but...
But you know they've had some good times together. We'll be right back.
Life's just a little bit different here in Kentucky. Must be something in the water. The fresh morning dew on rolling hills of bluegrass. The languid haze hanging on the trees of Appalachia. The misty spray of the Falls and Cumberland. Kentucky water sustains us. It's the foundation of the Commonwealth's premier sparkling beverage, L.A. With one sip you're there, right in the middle of everything that's great about bluegrass country. The free spirit, a thirst for something beyond the ordinary, and a trek off the beaten path. Handcrafted using a recipe passed down through four generations, our story is uncommon. Open an L8 and live your uncommon story. Crisp, clean ginger with a hint of citrus. For brace and pep, grab a late one. Grab an L8. And for a true Kentucky experience, try splashing a little bit of L8 on your favorite bourbon and enjoy a Kentucky classic.
Cool down now, Stallions. Cool down.
Fuck off, you cunt.
And chill out. Let's take a chill. What I say about the Bush Light now, Stallions? This can't keep happening between these songs. I'm done with the guys pounding beers between each set. What's Warner Brothers gonna think when they find out we drank a case every session? And we're tracking these Elvis tributes in 25 fucking minutes. They're gonna fucking cut payroll when they hear we drink Bush. For Christ's sake, get out that cooler, Zachary.
I'm coming.
Get on that stand-up. Hang time and Aaron, keep those backing vocals mellow. Let's send this fucker. I count us in. Now one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry? Drifted apart. Does your memory stray to a brighter sunny day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. You know, someone said that the world's a stage and each must play a part. Fate had me playing in love, you as my sweetheart. Act one was when we met. I loved you at first glance. You read your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue. Then came act two. You seemed to change and you acted strange. And why, I'll never know. Honey, you lied when you said you loved me, and I had no cause to doubt you. But I'd rather go on hearing your lies than go on living without you. Now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with emptiness all around. And if you won't come back to me, then make them bring the curtain down.
Ladies,
Are there just some days when you're not feeling completely fresh down there? Well, we have the product for you. From the makers of Chlorine.
Attention, citizens of Gotham. Do not attempt to change the station. I, Bane, have commandeered the city's broadcasting systems to bring you the following message. First, I and my coterie have liberated 200 pounds of nuclear material from Wayne Enterprises, and we have planted bombs at key structural sites across the city. Your elected officials have 24 hours to release the hostages illegally detained by Batman from Arkham Asylum and resign from their positions. It is time for the people to take back control of your city. Second, and more importantly, I have been seeing far too many of you going around without proper face coverings. We are engaged in deadly battle with COVID-19. It is grossly irresponsible to not take precautions that help prevent the spread of this disease. Once we have seized the means of production and cast out our overlords from their halls of power, we will need to be at full strength to build a greater future. Just look at me, Bane. I wear a mask all the time, and I suffer no ill consequences. Wearing a mask in public doesn't just make you look cool. It's the right thing to do. So be warned. If I see you out in public without a mask, it will be extremely painful. For you!
Red Cream Feminine Products. Just douche it.
Zachary Dackery, I've been reflecting on a lot of things recently. You know, I think back 10 years ago when I had to leave U of L, and I was sent over to Europe for that time after Paraguay. And I went over to Europe, and I was specifically doing this research project on modern European charlatans. And the best way to get to a charlatan in Europe is talk to the people on the streets. And, you know, there's a lot of gypsies all over the streets in Europe, and there's a lot of panhandlers, and there's a lot of people that you can learn a lot from. And with the Euro rail system, it's so easy to jump from place to place. And when you're just walking around all night being homeless, investigating this charlatan phenomena going across Europe in 2010, when people were you know, making money and doing the things that they do. We had the BP oil spill happening in America in the Gulf at that time. And I think those Chilean miners were stuck in the cave. And there I was just wandering around Europe. And I look back at these times and I just want to know, these people that I met and did all this research on modern European charlatans, I wonder if they're alive or if they're dead, you know? I mean, it'd be nice to know. And I wanted to bring in a guest, Daniel and Zachary. I just needed you guys to say your opinion and tell me if these people are dead or alive. And so I came up with a little game show, Zachary Dackery. You got a wheel of the 12 countries that I went across in 2010 to find out what these charlatans were doing all across Europe. And it was a very academic study. I want to tell you guys about these people that we met. Zach, if you could just go ahead and list the countries on the wheel, and we're going to spin it, and then I'm going to inform you guys of the people that were there, and then we're going to go through and say, hey, Ed, they're dead, or hey, Ed, they're alive. Maybe after this pandemic, I'm going to go find these people, talk to them, shake their hand, and say, hey, man, glad you made it this last decade. I appreciate surviving. Zach, let's read these countries off.
What's on the wheel? Let's see what's on the wheel.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the next thorough follow-up on these people. So, in this segment of Are They Dead Yet? We are going to be looking at past Ed journeys through Italy, Switzerland, Germany, Hungary, Croatia, Slovenia, Austria, the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, or France.
Well, the cultures there must be very different, I would imagine.
Yeah, this is Europe. I mean, you know, going into the modern age, I think 2010 was a really pivotal point in global history, because it's kind of, you know, right after the whole collapse of the American economy and stuff, and Obama is elected, and we have this new figure to look at to carry us into this new technological culture that we exist in now.
I got to say, Ed, I have to give it to you. I mean, look at all these countries. These are all non-English-speaking countries. You've completely avoided the Anglosphere. You're all about going out there and just immersing yourself in another culture.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that that's a commonality that they all share. Mm-hmm. Was there a particular reason for that?
There is a purpose there. That's part of the research that I was doing back then, you know. Pretty accustomed to the whole English culture. And I always liked the Latin language, and but this is even farther into the Balkans that I went, and that train ride was awfully long through Croatia, and seeing the battlefields, just the remnants of tanks from 10 years prior.
Incredible. All right, Ed, you ready to spin the wheel?
Yeah, go ahead. Let it rip, Zachary.
All right, here we go. All right, and the wheel has landed on the Czech Republic. Where in the Czech Republic did Ed find himself?
Well, yeah, the train doors opened. I was riding the train, and I had a couple day pass for the Global Rail. And you could just etch out the date and maybe make a 13 into an 18. So you would wait till the 18th and you'd show the train conductor, hey, it's the 18th. But really, I was traveling on the 13th too, but I made it an 18. And then the train conductor said, all right, you're good to go. So got off the train there in Prague, and it's probably overnight, because that's how I tried to sleep during those times, was just, you know, leave from the next city, which would have been Austria. Yeah, I remember the sun going down on that train ride from Austria to Prague. And I got there and I went to that main square where there's that astronomical clock. And that clock, there's these puppets that pop out. Like, it's not like really by time, like, at 6 o'clock, it's like maybe at 6:07 when something, you know, lines up in the astrological blah blah blah, these puppets pop out and they all represent these seven deadly sins. You know, I was walking past the clock, it popped out, I forget which one it was, but you know, the puppet was there. There was all these there was a lot of street hustlers in that block, and you could get whatever you wanted. They could eye you if you're pretty, you know, a single middle-aged man walking through there. They'd say, hey, you want some of this drug or that drug? And I wasn't too interested in drugs, but I was interested in the club scene.
Ed, is there any correlation between the prostitution and drug cultures? Do they overlap in any significant way? Is there any motivation behind that in this?
No, the hustlers that were in the streets right there, they were just trying to get people, you know, and between 20 and 30 or something to cash in on some drugs. But the prostitution more in Prague is I think there's places that had probably actual, like, more of a business establishment where they had, like, that was right in that block there. There was, like, it's not, I guess it's more like a strip club that you would go into. But I wasn't interested in that either. And but there would be like gypsy women that work independently in that main city square where the astronomical clock is. They might be hanging out under a tree, but they were separate than what the people that were selling drugs on corners right there. They were separate entities from the prostitution that would be happening in that city block of Prague, in that main square where the astronomical clock is. There would be a few different aspects of like criminal activity there.
So do you think sloth or gluttony is more of a 6 o'clock sin? Because if a seven deadly sin comes out on the astronomical clock, you know, 6 o'clock, what's maybe rage? Like you're getting out of work, you're stuck in traffic. You're probably getting pretty pissed off.
Yeah, there is a lot of traffic throughout there in Prague. I mean, that's the heart of the city right there where all this is going on. But I was recommended at that point by the African man that he said, hey, man, you want to party, man, go to Shop of Roots. You go to Shop of Roots. It's just right there. And it's kind of like these alleys. Like some places there's cars that go, some places there's not, but it's pretty narrow streets. And he was like, man, go to Shop of Roots. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to Shop of Roots. I'm going to the club. You know, maybe I'll have some drinks. So went to down this maybe 500 yards to a quarter mile away. There's this area called Shop of Roots where he directed me to, and there was this club. And above ground, it kind of looked maybe something like three times the size of the B-list there in Bellevue or something. But below it was this like hollow club where you'd go downstairs and there are just, you know, hundreds of people, just like really low bass. And when I got there, there was this guy that was from California actually that had been living there in Prague, and he had all this weed butter and he was just passing out these toothpicks and everyone just eating these toothpicks of weed butter and everybody's getting stoned, getting down to like American music. And it's just like Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, and like all these like, you know, 25 to 30 year old chicks just getting down, partying from Prague. You know, everybody's having a good time. People from Germany, there was like these three guys from Germany that just, you know, rode the train to party that night there in Shop of Roots. And so it was a lot. I'm having fun. California guy, he's having fun, but it's too loud to really talk. So I want to go outside. I go outside, and there's this man. Everybody's smoking cigarettes and spliffs and stuff outside, maybe some joints. They're throwing their butts on the ground, and there is Lada picking up the butts. And I'm like, this is perfect for my investigation for charlatans. Why not try to get some insight from Lada? Go talk to him about how he picks up these roaches outside of Shop of Roots in the club. And I mean, he has to have a shit ton of roaches. I mean, he had like a whole fucking bag full. Because it's like, there's 300 like people partying, smoking joints. And they're all throwing their butts on the ground. And it's a perfect time to capitalize on all these fucking roaches on the ground. So Lada's picking them up. I'm like, yo, man, that's a lot of roaches. You want to roll up like this roach joint and like we'll go fucking just hang out while everybody's clubbing and, you know, see what you're up to. And he was like, hey, man, I'll roll it up. So we start talking about his dad had passed away with that whole Bosnian and Serbian conflict. I think he held like Bill Clinton kind of responsible for a lot of that, and Lada's like anger and rage was just like all against the international community coming into Bosnia and killing his father. And Lada like really was vocal about all this, and he just wanted to talk about how like war could be coming. And he had lived in Prague. He had to escape Bosnia and just took the trains maybe for the last 5 years. He's probably in about 23, 24 years old, picking up roaches and just rolling up roach joints all day outside the club. And I mean, it seems like be pretty cool to just get high free. all the time. But Lada, is he alive or dead? I mean, he had a lot of rage in him. I don't know. I look back and wonder. He was, you know, in his early 20s. Did he make it the 33 or so? You know, I did, but did he? Who knows? I don't know.
Did he show rage towards anyone in person, or only sort of like an existential rage?
No, an existential rage, like, was more about like this whole global system that intervened, like NATO shit, like in his country, and just like killed his father, and his father had to go to war. Like, life was good, and then it's like all of a sudden, like, fuck, I gotta go to war. And then his dad dies, and then he's like, I'm getting the hell out of here, let's go to the Czech Republic and you know, be alone there for a couple years, just on the streets. I don't think he probably had a house for a couple years before I had met him, like, so, or a place to stay, or an apartment.
How are we defining a charlatan here? What is a charlatan?
Lada isn't necessarily a charlatan.
What is a charlatan?
Zach, could you go explain what a charlatan is to Daniel?
So a charlatan is someone that kind of misrepresents themselves, or kind of a scammer. You know, you would think of, let's say, a preacher who claims to be the word of God, but in fact they're, you know, cheating on their wife with three mistresses. In secret, they just live a big life of sin. Like, they're passing themselves off as being a genuine person, but in fact they're just a fraud. So a charlatan is like more that way. A snake oil salesman, gotcha. you know, would be a trope.
Yeah. Okay. What did he talk about, how he made money or got around?
No, like, he literally was kind of probably eating food out of trash and stuff. I mean, it's a pretty populated area that if you're like young and like able-bodied, there's going to be enough trash every night in the dumpsters of Prague, and there's going to be enough kind people that you're outside of a restaurant. Like, he's only got to eat once or twice a day or every other day or something. I mean, he was really skinny and frail, but really agile, able guy. I mean, he thought he was a soldier for whatever cause he was really, like, believed in. He was, like, a soldier for that, and, was just sad that he was in the situation that he was in, but Lada totally thought he was in the right of, like, I mean, he didn't seem like he wanted the work, really, but he was just enjoying himself. I mean, he wasn't upset with him picking up the roaches and rolling roach joints. He wasn't so upset with that. He was more upset with, like, the circumstances of, like, NATO fucking coming in and intervening, trying to unify, like, some Eastern cell block of Europe. He was more concerned with that than, like, his own health and eating and stuff. He was really politically motivated.
I think he's still alive, because he sounds like a fighting man.
Thanks, Daniel. That makes. I mean, I hope Lada's still alive. What do you think, Zachary?
So my issue with Lada still being alive is, I mean, this guy is picking up roaches off the ground and making super joints.
Yeah.
In the age of coronavirus, that's not gonna fly. That guy is dead. That guy's gone. There is no Lada anymore. Get out of here.
He survived up until, you know, March of this year.
Until 3 months ago.
Yeah. Well, that's sad.
Damn. Well, let's look at I want to see the Prague statistics.
All these people I met on this research project are kind of doing similar things. So, age of coronavirus really killed the age of street people. And I think that's why it's important for us to be having these conversations, because people are struggling on the streets, and today is a lot different than back in 2010 if you were a panhandler, street-dwelling person.
Lotta definitely made like a 14 roach super joint back in like March. He was hanging out. He was hanging out at the club, listening to some Dr. Dre from 2000, and he's dead now. He got the Rona and he died. Yep. There's nothing.
So looking at the statistics, is Czechia the Czech Republic?
Yeah, that's like the technical term. Like gotcha. If you're looking at a. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, that's
like a European map, you right. know, like Germany is Dutchland.
Right, right, right.
Or
so,
Spain
so
is Hispania.
There are 383 deaths in the Czech Republic.
Lotta's one of them. That's that one of them is Lotta.
Yep.
You know, I think he's one of the 383.
His chances were pretty high, but maybe he fled. Maybe he went somewhere else. Maybe he went back to Bosnia. Who knows?
That's true. In which case, he's a death statistic in one of those countries. Because that dude is dead.
You know, I saw Are a they fighting dead spirit, yet? Though. I saw a fighting spirit. And can you think of anyone who has a stronger immune system than someone who smokes super joints every night of the week? Like, he's got the Mr. Burns scenario. He has every disease.
But he survived off the club scene. Like, it's when the club scene died.
Oh, shit. His spirit died.
Well, see, Lotta, like, didn't necessarily hang it. He had a baseball hat on and, like, he wasn't involved into the club's people. He was scavenging off. The club scene that was happening.
How homeless did he look? How presentable was he?
He had like, you know, a black hoodie on and black pants. I mean, it was like he was pretty street ready, like capable guy. His clothes weren't like super torn or anything, but I'm sure he was finding like different changes of clothes weekly, like on the streets of Prague. I mean, it's a
right.
In any metropolis, but especially like in those European metropolises, there's pretty condensed populations in his street area.
You know, Daniel, you might have convinced me there talking about his heightened immune system. I think that's actually a kind of compelling point. I think Lotta might have had a fighting chance.
Yeah, he.
There's a lot of
everything was fighting everything. Nothing could get in. So I think the Rona stood no chance. He was a young, you said it itself, he was a young, able-bodied gentleman.
Mm-hmm. I really do.
And he shared with you. And yeah. I think he would share in the coronavirus and be totally fine. I think he is not of the 383. I think he's of the 11,587 recovered.
Yeah. And now he's immune to even more.
The cure might actually be inside Lotta.
Right, right.
Because think of how, from his bag of 1,000 roaches that he had, think of how many club people shared those roaches. Because, I mean, these clubs were being packed back in 2010. So nowadays, back in 2019 in December, I mean, those clubs, Shop of Roos was thriving back then in January.
So,
I mean, he had, back in January, New Year's Eve, he probably, you know, shared those joints, those roach joints he was smoking on New Year's Eve definitely had Corona on them. Because, I mean, there was probably a lot of Chinese tourists in Prague back in January just having a good time at Shop of Roos too, that I'm sure one of those joints passed through Lotta's mouth, and he might have been one of the first to be exposed.
Well, let's say this. Let's say, so he picked up 1,000 joints. He picked up like 1,000 joints a day. Was that what?
Yeah, I mean, a night, like in a couple hours, 3 hours. Or
okay,
so.
1,000 joints. You'd say probably 3 people hit off each of those joints.
Yeah.
So that's 3,000 people in a night. So yeah. He has the immune system of 21,000 people a week. Think about that.
Yeah.
Every year that he's there is a million people. He's one in a million people.
Like, really help this whole. If he is immune, we should find this guy. If he's alive, he could have some type of immunity to, like, really help the entirety of the world. I mean, even if he's not the greatest guy.
Yeah, how pleasant of the conversation, how pleasant was it to talk to, how was he to talk to?
It was just, I mean, it was, I like Lana and stuff. He's a good guy. I didn't feel threatened, but he was kind of aggressive against agreements made back in 1989.
Yeah.
Do we want to go ahead and spin the wheel?
Yeah, we can do that, Ed. One thing, how were the roach joints? Were they good? Did you get high?
Well, yeah.
Was it more of a sativa high, an indica high?
Yeah, do you feel it more in your body or more in your mind?
The California guy and the toothpicks, that's more what might have got me.
Gotcha.
And
a lot of his roach joints were just icing on top.
Left the club that night. I saw him walking up the hill or whatever, and he had like three chicks wrapped around each of his arms. Like that guy definitely
three on each arm. Were they carrying him?
Yeah, a total of six.
he's just passed out, and they're all just like, because he had like seven toothpicks worth of weed butter.
Mm-hmm.
He had like 200 milligrams of weed in his body, and there's like six women just carrying him home. This happens to
that was pretty much the final scene I saw of California guy.
All right, final verdict.
All right, I think Lada is alive and is very immune to a lot of these things. Zachary?
All right, boys, hate to say it. Lada's dead. Not from the Rona, not from some other infectious disease. He just died.
You think he, like, overdosed?
An accident at some point.
No, he got hit by a car or something. Just a freak thing.
I mean, he took a lot of risk every night. Daniel, what do you say about my buddy Lada?
I think he's alive and kicking. I think he's found a home and a wife.
Better life.
And he got therapy, and he has processed his father's death and the 1989 NATO peace treaty that he has formed his adult identity around, and I think he had to turn a new leaf.
That feels good to hear.
There's
that.
A white picket
Thanks,
fence
Daniel.
Involved. I think Lada's alive.
Yeah, that brings a lot of hope.
A lot of hope.
All right, go ahead and spin it again, Zachary.
All right, back to the wheel, and here we go. Spain and Spain. Ooh, right. We're going to beautiful Spain.
Yeah, so I was kicked out of Brussels. There was like this embargo on Americans flying back to the U.S. at that time, and police officers outside were like, man, you're not going to get back to the U.S. on whatever type of ticket you got. And I'm like, well, what if I spend these last few dollars on a plane ticket with
chicken wings?
Within the European Union and take a trip down to Spain. Because actually that idea came from, there was a couple out front and I was like, where would be a nice place to just chill on a tarp and just, you know, just be able to hang out for about 6 weeks. And just like 6 weeks of just down on a beach, chilling. They're like, well, try out Malaga, Spain. A lot of people like to go as tourists there, you know, from farther north. They enjoy, like, this time of year down there. It's beautiful down in Malaga. So I was like, all right, I'll spend this, like, $67 I have left on this Ryanair plane ticket or whatever. And so I get on with my wife beater shirt. So I get there. And I just need to kill a lot of time. So instead of going into Malaga, for some reason it was just like split second to see, like the train came before the other train in the other direction. So I took the train away from Malaga and went like 30 miles down to a city called Tormelino's. And I set up shop there, got the tar, played it out on the beach, you know, spent a couple days out there. And then I ran into one night, there was this African woman from Morocco doing braids back, like cornrows. And I was, I had like really long hair at that time. And I'm like, yo, you know, how hard would it be to do some cornrows? And I couldn't understand how much she said it was going to be. But anyway, she did my cornrows like in just like a couple minutes. And like then she was like, I need like $40. And I'm like, I have like these 2 euro coins and that's about it. And I had to like kind of like dip and kind of jogged away. And but I got the cornrows.
Sounds like you're the charlatan in that situation.
Well, yeah. I mean, at this time, like I'm learning some things and like the research has gone to like I've gone broke and it's a matter of survival.
Down and out in Malagas and Tormelinas. Holy yeah. cow.
So it all comes down to survival at this point. And I got the cornrows. I go out that night, karaoke in. There was this bar and there was this girl from Britain there that I met. And she had been...
Do you remember what song she did?
It was, you know... Something like Alanis Morissette or something like It's Rain, nice. You know, it's like something real typical nice. Like that. I'm pretty sure that's what she was trying to sing to me, to be like, look, I speak English too. Like, you're not alone in this bar. And I'm like, yo, killer Alanis Morissette. And she's like, yeah, I just come back and forth from Britain selling cartons of cigarettes. And that's how I afford to, you know, have my apartment and stuff here. And so have a few whiskey drinks, go to a different bar, kind of lose track of her. And, you know, I go back to the beach later on. Anyways, so I was trying to go back to the airport because I'm trying to get home at this point because, like, you know, it's time that... I'm out of money. The research project is kind of coming to a closing. I've kind of learned maybe enough at this point to be able to finish the textbook. I'm going to the airport and I'm trying to get this free ticket home. And like they keep on telling me, just you're not able to do it. And I run into the sheriff. There's this guy, not the sheriff is like the police. It's this guy that's always sitting out front. And he has a bandana on and he's got a couple things of luggage and he's about like 74 years old. And he's like, hey man, I'm the sheriff. And I'm like, yo, I got a cool shirt that you could have. That's like, says the captain's back. And it was like a Captain Morgan shirt that I got free from like some club, like a couple nights ago. And I was like, here's a shirt, man. Cause it looks like you're just homeless outside of the airport. He's like, yeah, man, we got like a whole club going on here. He's like, we're a whole like resident association. You've met the sheriff of the Resident Association of Malaga International. And I'm like, that's really interesting because I'm kind of stranded to here too. And he's like, yeah, like I'm originally from Scotland and there's this like other Irish guy that lives here and there's a guy from Netherlands and a Serbian couple. There's this guy that always rides a bike. He was like, just, you know, just chill here for a while and you'll meet some of these people. So I sat there and all of a sudden there comes this guy with like oversized shoes and an oversized shirt and big hat and it's red and he had super huge glasses and everything didn't fit him. And he's like, just like, he's pretty clumsy. I don't know if it's just because of the clothing he was wearing that he was so clumsy, but the stuff, the couple bags that he was hauling around with him, he was tripping over everything. And you could just tell the guy had a clumsy personality, kind of goofy. But he came, started talking to the sheriff, and he was like, yeah, this is my buddy Scotty. This other man appeared, and he had a like a straw top hat on, and he was the guy, the Irish guy. And he had a broken arm, and his kind of gimmick was like he would go up to like travelers, and he would like his arm was like mangled, and it was just like looked horrible, and he'd just like lift up the sleeve, and like everybody would be like, "Oh my god, like look at that guy's arm! You gotta give him a couple bucks." So I mean, he's kind of the main source of income for this whole residents association because of his arm. Like he had to leave the hospital right after it broke. He said. He just couldn't stay in that place. And, like, the sheriff had, like, a pretty interesting history because he said he was doing this, like, reconnaissance mission. He said he was, a jet pilot, like, doing reconnaissance on some private military contracting into Russia, and his plane crashed, but the contractor still paid him in the Swiss bank account, and the money sat in the Swiss bank account, but technically the sheriff was dead, like, but the money exists there, so he can't get to the money because he's technically dead, but he actually survived the mission when his plane crashed in Russia and had came to Malaga and International Airport and had been staying there for about 10 years. These guys had stayed there for years, and they were cooking some canned goods on top of the roofs and stuff every night. There was like a ladder up there. And the curly haired guy with really blonde hair that reminds me of Sammy Hagar. He had been just finding all these drugs in the garbage cans. Because like that's what everybody was doing. They're leaving Malaga after all the clubbing that they did during their time there on the beach. They're going to drop their drugs into the garbage can before they get on the plane, of course. And there's the curly-haired, blonde-haired guy that just basically take all those because he seemed kind of stingy with his stuff that he had found. But there was this the Serbian couple. They were in their 50s or so, and they argued and were, like, just yelling at each other the whole time. And just maybe it was this cultural thing because I couldn't understand the language, but very, very not happy with their marriage. And maybe it was because she was running around with all the other guys. And I could see a lot of that happening. I mean, she was the only female while these guys are camping out every night.
How hot was she from a scale 1 to 10?
She's about a 3.
A 3?
And I just kept on going back to Tormolino's, and there would be a lot of, like, clubs, a lot of music going on every night until sunrise in Tormolino's once I kind of found where stuff was going on. Basically, by that point, I mean, I had, I guess, kind of became like Lada in some ways where, like, you know, I'd go in the bar, but, you know, kind of having fun just rolling up some stogies outside and doing my own thing and going back to the beach at night for a couple weeks. And every day the sheriff would be back at the airport when I would go back. The sheriff and his guys, you had the oversized shirt and jacket guy. You had the curly-haired Sammy Hagar-looking guy. You got this guy that's running up and down the beach, always on his bike. I mean, he's going to the beach, riding for 20 minutes, getting to Malaga, and then coming right back to the airport to just check on the Resident Association of Malaga. And these guys are a tight-knit group, and, like, everybody in the airport knew who these guys were. And, like, all the janitors are, like, tipping their hat to the sheriff and being like, "What up, man? What's up, sheriff?" Knocking hands with him, and he's like, "Man, I'm just living." And he would just, like, go in and out of the stalls probably at the bathroom and just kind of would, he would go inside for a couple hours and the sheriff would disappear. And he was like, I went to my office, and he went to the bathroom for a couple hours, get some AC, and then just come back out. And it was like full-time gig for those guys, and they could still be living there. So what do you guys think? The Resident Association of Malaga International, are these guys dead or alive? Help me out. I need to know. It's been 10 years. These guys still kicking it there?
I think oversized clothes guy, he's out. He never stood a chance. I think he died a week later. when he tripped and fell into the street and got run over by a bus.
I could definitely see that happening.
He didn't make it past 2011.
I thought he was kind of a time bomb, too. I mean, I saw him trip 10 different times when he was...
Yeah, so he's a goner. He's no longer with us.
That's the first thing. If I was, like, full-time homeless, I want some good shoes. And I'm not, like, willing
to, shoes.
I'd rather wear sandals than, like, size 15. He might wear a size 9 or something.
But maybe the sneakers weren't cool yet in 2010.
He thought he was stylish. Like, his glasses were huge and his eyeballs are popping out. Like,
yeah.
Magnified.
Yeah, like, but, like, street fashion got really cool in, like, 2016, 2017.
Though he was kind of
so if he survived that long, I think he traded up in sneakers because he had all the fat. He was the fashion.
Yeah.
And he could have been ahead of his time. He's now prosperous. No, I actually think he's dead. He died a week later.
Yeah, I would give him a couple weeks, but I think everybody was pretty in rough shape because they already had been there for a couple years. And I mean, he was in his upper 50s or 60s, and he was a veteran for the Resident Association. But those guys, their time was ticking. What do you say, Zachary?
So I think that everyone's alive except for the sheriff and the three.
The sheriff and the who?
And that girl you said was the three.
Yeah.
It's tough out there. I mean, if you're just a three, I mean, most girls, like, you really don't go past five. You just get mean if you're going past five. But a three? Holy cow, this girl.
It was rough.
Poor thing. Poor thing. I feel bad for her.
Was she a three because she was, like, living this lifestyle and could have been, like, a more attractive person? Or she was a three?
Well, she had, like, on a dress and, like, an older style, more like a jean material, pretty thick dress that had been worn and had, like, a lot of black soot and stuff on it from, like, sleeping in the gutter all the time. And, like... it was almost like more like a kitchen apron material that, like, I don't know where she could have made it. It's not that it was like a cardboard dress, but it was like a step up from that.
Damn. So I don't think she made it. I don't think she made it.
She was probably weighed 210 or 215 or so, too. I didn't notice like any malnourishment in the sense of maybe diet. She might have been eating enough, scavenging enough food, but the hygiene. I wonder if Zach kind of thinks she's dead because she could have been fooling around with the sheriff, and I didn't know if he thinks that the death was maybe caused by her kind of sleeping around and being with, like, the sheriff kind of rules this clan. And this Serbian guy was very upset about the circumstances of him being married and with this woman and the sheriff kind of ruling things in the group. I didn't know if Zachary Dacquery picked up on that tension from the explanation or if he just thinks the sheriff was old and, I mean, the sheriff could hardly walk, but his arm wasn't messed up, but his leg was messed up. He needed a walker to get back and forth from his office inside. The guy with the mangled arm and the top hat, what do you think about him?
He didn't make it. He got gangrene and died like a month later.
Yeah, he might have had an infection at that point.
Yeah, he died of disease very quickly.
Yeah.
But that was the main primary money source for the group. So if he dies early, then Sheriff's got to try to, you know, step up and do what he can.
Yeah, but he can symbolically walk at this point.
And he can. And he's got to work himself to death, but he has to. So Sheriff's out too.
He was leading the group by all his stories he had with the private contract and used to be the pilot. I mean, like, everybody was like, this dude used to pilot planes, so he must know what we should do. And everybody looked at the sheriff as like the old man that could fly the plane that was like the most knowledgeable guy of the group. If they needed a decision made.
Did you believe his story?
There's no reason to doubt the sheriff. I mean, why not believe that he did have that money in that bank account? I mean, it doesn't hurt me to believe him. I believe the sheriff.
So he was really well respected.
Yeah.
In the group.
But if he died, I think the group could have, like, dwindled away. Like, the guy on the bike might not be coming back to the airport because, I mean, who's there to see if the sheriff isn't hanging out with his buddies? Like, he might just stay on the beach that day, and then if the guy doesn't come back with the bike and the guy with gangrene dies, oversized boot guy trips, gets hit by a bus, they could have all fell in, like, a week. I mean, they were really fragile as a group, but they had lasted a long time there, and maybe they were resilient enough that somehow all their odd backgrounds coming together just made them really resilient.
I think Bike Guy is doing best out of everybody because I think he actually is. He's the messenger. He's the Hermes.
Yeah.
He's getting exercise all day.
He was bringing like the news back from like what's going on in town and stuff. Like, you know, if they were, if they were trading something, he's going to bring something into town for the sheriff. Like, because they were finding some good things in the garbage. I mean, that's kind of like, they had some, like, network of society, like, their own little society that was able to live, like, off, like, eight people outside of the terminal, like, full-time, just finding stuff in the garbage. People are throwing away. They can't bring on planes. And, like, bicycle guy being like, hey, I might know some guy, like, in town or something. And while the panhandlers are, like, showing people their arm, like, every 30 minutes, and then they would come back with their money and, like, basically bring it to the sheriff, and the sheriff's like, well, like, maybe the bike guy can pick us up, like, you know, a 12-pack or maybe a bottle of rubbing alcohol, because when things were rough, like, these people drink rubbing alcohol, and that kind of suppresses your hunger, I guess, and still kind of fucks you up.
Whoa. So, yikes. I don't think anyone's alive in this story. None of these people survived COVID. None of these people survived COVID. You think Sheriff has an immune system that can handle a respiratory disease?
No. See, I think he died for political reasons. See, I think Sheriff supported the Catalan independence movement, but everyone else wasn't for that. They were all more like followers.
It was like
types,
killing Caesar? Like a Brutus type thing?
Yeah, it was that kind of thing. He wanted to go and join the Catalan and their fight for independence from the rest of Spain, but the other guys were like, no, we're part of the mainland, we're staying. And then that was just the turning point.
None
they
of these guys were originally from Spain, but had all lived there for years. Out of the whole homeless global community, in some ways I felt like these guys like had won. Like they had found paradise in some ways. Because like they were on the coast of Malaga, Spain, like a beautiful region, and just like, you know how like people are like, if I was homeless, I would move south, get out of the cold, I don't want to handle the winters. Well, it's like if you're like a global homeless guy, you're like looking at the map, you're like, I want to go 60 miles from Gibraltar, Malaga, Spain, Torremolinos, right in that area, nice Mediterranean weather year round. We got stuff coming in and out of Morocco. If I need to send something to Africa, if I need to get something from Africa, if I mean...
What sort of thing would you get from Africa?
I mean, that's the gateway to the East. I'm not saying me in particular, but like...
Yeah, what would someone buy? What would someone buy from get from Africa? What is Africa?
Well, I mean, that's where all hash comes from Morocco into Europe is through that region is where all hash is
hash
like the hash. Moroccans
right,
like
so drugs
that's what's going through that region that maybe funds these street populations in some ways. The sheriff wasn't necessarily too involved in hash, but he was living off the garbage of the millions of people going in and out of there every summer that are all there to party for hash from Morocco.
How risky actually is dumpster diving?
I don't know. A lot of people that do dumpster dive, like, it's weird that they're still alive because, like, a lot of times you might see, like, a 50-year-old man dumpster diving. You're like, how'd you survive 50 years dumpster diving? And it must happen, but I could easily see there's a lot of change with people on the street. Like if you see people walking that are homeless, like the rotation kind of happens pretty quick, that you see the same person for 3 months And then they're like gone, and it's like a new person that's walking around for 3 months that's homeless. So maybe these people get to an age that they're dying off quick, but there is a wide population of them. I don't know. I think there's a
very nomadic.
Yeah. I think there's more homeless people than we think, or there's more homeless people dying than we really talk about. Yeah.
They're just all dead.
Yeah. COVID really kind of does throw a wrench in these people's survival. Yeah, I would say everybody at the Resident Association of Malaga is probably dead.
Yeah, Daniel, thanks for joining us on this this edition of Are They Dead Yet?
Thanks. It's been great having me. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm honored. Is there going to be an update episode? Is this going to be like Unsolved Mysteries? Update. And I'm like, yes, I need to know if this guy's dead or not. I think they're all dead.
They're all dead. That's a pretty good bet. I probably went light, but you know, I'm an optimist. I want to believe that some of these guys are still kicking.
Think about it this way. When you're homeless, you age like a dog. Every year is like 7 years. Because that's how much stress your body's being put through. And so like, sure, do they live long lives? Yes, but just really fast long lives.
I never thought of it that way. That's actually really
pointy. So 10 years, that's 70, or no, it's 70 years. So these people are like 90. Yeah. And you know what the death rate for COVID for 90-year-olds is? It's pretty bad.
At least in the 90 percentile. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So they aged poorly.
Mm-hmm. It is a lot of stress to be out on the streets in Europe, but I think these people did find a good spot to live if they choose to be that way. And I think Malaga is a good spot to set up shop if you are homeless. It's kind of like the homeless dream. It's the mecca of the homeless population is southern Spain.
I want to challenge that, though, because your original recommendation was someone saying it's great this time of year.
Yeah, there might not be as many tourists year-round.
So what if it was horrible for 9 months out of the year and they had like a really brutal winter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know Spain's weather at all. I've never been to Spain. What's Spain like in December? I'm curious. Okay. So this is not telling me much. Okay. It gets cold.
How cold?
48. Is the coldest temperature
45? Yeah,
that's pretty chilly.
What time were you there? What time of the year were you there, Ed?
I was in Malaga, Spain, at beginning of August of 2010.
Yep, you were in perfect time of the year. Yeah, it was probably nice and cool, 70 degrees.
Yeah, the sunshine every day.
Damn. Wow. Cool. All right.
Clear night.